Fine. So, a few little while ago, I don't know how long ago it was, we dealt with most of the authorship questions in Gemara. We covered like two blot there on who wrote every book and what exactly is going on. We didn't cover everything, meaning I think we maybe skimmed over some of the questions like, did David really write all of Tehillim or the 10 authors? And what about, is there Tehillim which is post-Davidic? You know, things like Al-Naharad Bavel, right? Do you think that's written in prophecy? Do you think that's written or just written later? Like the position, there's at least one position in the Drash like that. It's taken by Maharzu and others. But the weirdest one in it, which I said we would get back to, is, and Reis Klar wrote an article on this at some point. I asked him if he wanted to give. He didn't, so I'll give it, is the weird line where the Gemara says, Moshe katav svaro, Rav Moshe wrote his book, the Torah. That's easy. That's actually not weird. Uparshat Bil'am v'Iyov. So we talked about Iyov extensively, and that's obviously machloket, but the weird one is Parshat Bil'am. What the heck is Parshat Bil'am? So my longtime cover sub, Rabbi Dr. Shlomo Zofia, wrote an article on Lair House. And I will tell you his title, right? It's a wonderful title for this problem, which is The Problem of Mosaic Authorship You Never Heard Of. What is Parshat Bil'am? Right? I mean, what is this thing? It's really odd. Like, so, what do you think it is? What do you think it is? Well, what are the possibilities, methodologically? What are the possibilities? What is Parshat Bil'am? Okay, right. So one possibility, as Yosef said, is to say that Parshat Bil'am is something in the Torah that we know of. Either all of Parshat Balak, some specific section of Parshat Balak, I mean, take your pick. But one direction is to take, is to go in that direction. Now, so Yosef, you tell me, what are the strengths of that position? What are the weaknesses of that position?
Strength
of that position is, well, I at least can identify what it is we're talking about. Pachod yoter. Right, more or less, I know what this is. Again, all of Parshat Balak, some of Parshat Balak, I don't know. So methodologically, that there's an advantage to that. What's the obvious problem with saying that? Thank you, Yosef. Is that if indeed Parshat Bil'am means what we call Parshat Balak, so what exactly? Moshe katav svaro, v'gam Parshat Breshit, v'gam Parshat Noach, v'gam Parshat Yitro, v'gam Parshat Re'eh, v'gam Emor, v'gam Sipuro Shel HaMikalel. I mean, like, well, okay, thank you, and, I mean, right? The only controversial part of, from Chazal's perspective, the only controversial part of the Torah that Moshe may not have written are the last eight psukim. Why the last eight psukim? Because he's dead. Very good. Right? The only thing that's controversial, and that, as much as I would love to spend time in that I got it, I spent a week on that with my guys last year when we did Menachot. I started with that. So yeah, so I'm really not going to do that again. If you're interested, you can go back. It was literally 5 hours of shir. Like, what does it mean? What is the halacha? What halachic implications does that have? What does it mean that the Gemara solves it according to one of these emotions, wrote it bidema? And why does the Ibn Ezra say it's not 8, it's 12, which is 16, right, in all sense of its fun mathematics, which, I don't know if you caught that last week when Dr. Berman said it. No? So the Ibn Ezra extends it. First of all, he extends it from 8 to 12, because the last 8 psukim, the Torah Moshe, is dead. But the last 12 psukim, he has already gone to his death and never returned. Right? So the Ibn Ezra extends 8 to 12, right, which is the first controversial move. The second controversial move that he makes is that there are 4 other psukim scattered throughout the Torah where it sounds like they're written from a distant future, because it's looking back at the Torah in past tense, or might be, depending on how you understand the word az, right, lakanani az baret, which can either mean we're in the land or we're still in the land, right, then we're in the land, but implying not anymore, which is someone looking back at the vantage point, and therefore the Ibn Ezra comes up with what he calls the Soda Shtei Mesrei. Right? On each of these he said, this is the secret of the 12, which is very ambiguous, and but the most likely explanation of some of the commentaries on Ibn Ezra note is that he thought that there were actually 16 psukim that were not written by Moshe. The last 12, which was already an expansion of the 8, and then another 4 scattered throughout the Torah that are written by some later Navi, which is nothing compared to Yehuda Chassid does, who like takes huge sections of the Torah and just sort of plays around with it, like Az Yashir and things like that. And he just sort of mixes matches, Tehillim, Torah, like sort of shuffles it around, all types of fun things. So I spent 5 days on this because the halacha and the philosophy there is fascinating. But that's not this. Right? This is just weird. Meaning, I get it. The last 8 psukim in the Torah, the Gemara raises the question, did Moshe write it? Because he was dead. What's the problem with Parsha? Right? If you want to go in the direction of Yosef and say that Parshat Bil'am means what we know as Parshat Balak, so then, Yosef, tell me, why do you need to say this? Say it again? Okay, good. So what Yosef says is actually probably the pshat. I would argue it's probably the best shot of the Gemara, right? Though, surprisingly, it's not actually the preferred commentary shot of many of the Mefarshim. But I think it's the simplest, which is simply Bilam and Balak are having a conversation, and there are no Jews on the scene. And therefore, yes, it's part of the Torah, but the Chiddush is that, how does Moshe know? Answer, I don't know, Nevuah, probably, right? But the answer is that the Chiddush that Moshe wrote Parshat Balak is that it's the only part of the Torah post-Mosaic where Moshe isn't present, or Mosaic and on. Now, you'll ask me, well, what's the difference between that and Naniach Bereishit, right? All of Sefer Bereishit. There's an obvious answer to that, which is... No, that was pre-Matan Torah. So when Moshe was given the Torah, whatever you think happened, there's nothing stopping you from saying that God gave him the history. Right? It's weirder. It's one thing to say that God gave him history. It's another thing to say that something that happened in contemporaneous to Moshe, right? And he's not part of the story. No Jews are part of the story. It makes sense that they're the only partial like that. Right? It's one thing to talk about ancient history. Sure, ancient history, so you know, God gives you the history. That's not so weird. So that, I think, is probably the easiest answer, given it's probably the easiest answer. But for some reason, no one likes this answer. I don't know why. I do think it's probably pshat. I once heard it from Roy Liebtag. I'm like, yeah, that's probably pshat. But what else? How else might you explain this Gemara? If you don't go in Yosef's direction, how else might you deal with this Gemara? What do you think, Adam? If Parshat Bil'am...
One thing.
So let's stay within this subcategory, meaning Adam is already saying, aha, maybe it doesn't mean Parshat Balak, but let's assume it is Parshat Balak. Let's try to answer this question, which is, if it is Parshat Balak, then what does the Gemara have to tell us that Moshe wrote it? Right? One possibility is it's the only Parsha after, right, it's not ancient history, where Moshe, no Jews, no nothing, are present, and therefore it's a Chiddush to say that God nevertheless told Moshe was going on, and therefore he could write a book on it. Right? He could write a history. What else might you say?
Should this relate to other
Haggadot that we know? No, I think it's Mishara. If you have another Haggadot, so great.
Doesn't it talk about, in a separate Haggadot, that Christ be carrying the level of prophecy of Moshe to the long, and so therefore there's some contention between their power, and so...
Yeah, look at that. Okay, so Sean takes a different approach, which is present in some of the Hasidic sources and more Kabbalistic sources, which is that, yes, it's in the Torah, but the reason that you have to say this is because there is this tension between Nevuat Moshe and Nevuat Bilam that creates an oddity that makes it hard for, or not obvious that Moshe would be the author. Right? So yes, the Sifrei in Vezot HaBracha, right, that Lo Kam Navi Od Israel Kim Moshe, a Navi in Israel never rose as great as Moshe, and how does the Midrash very shockingly read that? Correct. But there was no Nevuah amongst the Jews. There was no Navi amongst the Jews was as great as Moshe. But there was a Navi amongst the non-Jews who was as great as Moshe, which was Bilam. And Rav Tzadok HaKohen, right, we talked about it a little bit last week, Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin, in the Pre-Tzadok, right, says what this teaches you is that Moshe and Bilam had unique type of nevuah, where most Nevi'im are more interpretive, right? They have visions and they interpret, but they don't necessarily have God speak through their mouth, whatever that means, a more direct type of prophecy. And therefore they're not the unmediated word of God. Moshe and Bilam were in fact the unmediated word of God. And therefore, he writes as follows. Basically, everything else in the Torah, what made it kadosh? Moshe's retelling. Because since Moshe speaks with God's voice, therefore he says, "Al-Yidei Ktivato Otam Bahatara Naaseh HaKol Torah." That's Moshe's power, to transform these things into Torah. But there's a tension when you're talking about Bilam's prophecies, right? He says, "Ach parshat Bilam shebazel lo haya tzarich l'chadesh davar shei be'emet hayu dvar Hashem rak shehaya Bilam okem tzvatav vozeh ma'aseh motot hapeh al zavu b'yichur parshat Bilam she'inu b'chol katav tzvaro." Right? Since Bilam shares Moshe's level of nevuah, that means it doesn't need Moshe to transform it into Torah. Ki'ilu. Right? It is already at that highest level because it's Mila b'Mila from God. And therefore, it's a chiddush to say that Moshe wrote it, that Moshe needed to write it. Moshe needs to write everything else because by Moshe writing it and using his unique power of nevuah, he transforms it into a chetz shel Torah. But he didn't need to do that with anything that that Bilam said. Now, Rav Tzadok in that context notes that to highlight the fact that just because Bilam could do that, it's not necessarily the case that Bilam is great. It's just that he was a powerful Navi, which obviously for the Rambam is a bit problematic, but fine. He says, what in that story shows that despite that Bilam is a super Navi, he's still not necessarily a great person? Well, that's obvious, but what symbolically in the story does that?
The donkey.
Yeah, the donkey. Right? Meaning, if a donkey can talk, then a Bilam could be a prophet. That doesn't necessarily show something about his personal, spiritual level. Alternatively, the Shalah says the following. He says, look, why was it necessary for Bilam to be the prophet for these? Right? Why didn't Moshe, let's say, be the... Why wasn't he the prophet for all these brachot? Matovu, why not? I mean, why did it have to be Bilam of all people? So he argues that that's the whole point of the story, is that it's a transformation story, where this evil sorcerer comes and ends up blessing the Jews, even though he tried to curse them, which indicates, right, like a unity between good and evil. Showing that basically everything comes from God. And if that's the case, it is, right, it's unique in that sense, right? Meaning it's Dafka, an evil person who, nevertheless, because God controls the world, transformed it into bracha, and that is a different message than the rest of the Torah, which is like kulo kadosh. And therefore, it's different. It's, you know, it's different than the rest
of the stories in the Torah. And therefore, you had to tell me that nevertheless, Moshe is the one who channels this to be part of Torah. Okay, you could have variations. Again, I think the most practical is, as we said before, it's just not there. It's just not there. There's no reason to believe he's there. Okay, but the other approach here is what Adam gets at, which is much more radical, which is, well, the major problem with Yosef, right? We mentioned one of the major problems with Yosef's interpretation, which is, if it's part of the Torah, what do you have to tell me? So we offered a few possibilities. But there's another problem with Yosef's interpretation. What's the other problem with Yosef's interpretation? Right? What's the other problem with saying that Parshat Bilam means Parshat Balak? It's not a very hard question. It's a very prosaic question. Right? There's a very easy answer here. I think, anyways. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. You haven't read the Gemara in a while. Right? But remember, what's the whole context of the Gemara? Who wrote what's Sefer and Tanakh? Every single other line in that whole blot of Gemara is about a Sefer. Moshe katab svaro. He wrote his Sefer. His Sefer Iyov. Right? Yoshua katab svaro, except for the end when he died. Shoftim was written by Shmuel. Shmuel was written by Shmuel and God and Natan. And Melachim was written by v'chulei, 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 v'chulei. Literally every other line of this was a whole book. And even when the Gemara goes out of its way to tell you that that part of the book was written by somebody else because Yoshua died, the last few psukim were written by Eliezer or Pinchas or whatever. And then, right, Shoftim, right, and then Shmuel dies, so it's picked up by God and Natan, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, right, till the end, right? Even when they do that, what does the Gemara never do? Yeah, it never called them a new Sefer. It didn't say, Shmuel, right?
And also this other part of
it. Right, Shmuel katab svaro. Shmuel wrote his book until he died, and whatever was the remainder of the book, so God did it. I want, there's a big gaping problem in that, which is, you know, a good percentage of Shmuel, but half of Shmuel or more, that Shmuel is dead, right? So Shmuel, it never says, it never calls it Sefer. It never, like, gives it its own unit, even Parshat, right? It's not even like Parshat God in Shmuel is written by God, and Parshat Natan is written by Natan, right? Even the last eight books of the Torah are not like Parshat Mitat Moshe, right? It's referred to by the Gemara as Shmoneh Pesukim, right? The Shmoneh Pesukim Machloket, the Eight Pesukim Machloket, right? Literally, never in the entire story does it do this. So why Pitom? Here we like Parshat Bilam, that's unit. Right? Everything else is book. If it's not book, it tells you. Right? But that's the structure of the entire Gemara. There are 24 books. This is who wrote them. Maybe some of them, they only wrote part of it. Then people died. They get picked up. But nowhere ever did someone say, Parshat Natan. Parshat God. Right? It's a book and parts of books. But what is this, like, unit? It's giving it a definition. Right? So it's a little bit weird.
That also makes me want to think
that
it's not Adam, but
it's
like, you know, part of
the Torah. Oh, okay. Right, so Adam had a relatively conservative view here, right, which is maybe it's something else in Tanakh. But, and he asked, well, what is it in Tanakh? He doesn't know. Caleb is always a good guess, right? Something in that 150 project of Tanakh to talk about Bilam, right? So, I don't know. Good guess, but if you can think of one, that'd be great. I mean, you know.
We don't know
other
books that are discussed
tomorrow. Okay. Good. So Yosef says, well, remember, there are other books floating around in the time of the Torah. There aren't only these books. There are plenty of books. There are books that made it into Tanakh. There are books that didn't make it into Tanakh. Some of them are contemporaneous. Some of them, they're even a machlokes. So give me an example. Give me an example of books in Tanakh that we know there's a machlokes about. Okay, the Gemara discusses Esther, meaning they're not really a machloket. The Gemara discusses they're having been a machloket, but fine, yes. Shira Shirim, correct, right? Shira Shirim, there's a machloket about whether there was a machloket by Shira Shirim. But very good. The Mishnah Yadayim has a machloket about whether, right? It's one of the weirdest machloket ever, right? Shira Shirim, they weren't sure where to put it in. Rabbi Kiva says, no, Chas V'Shalom, there was never a machloket by Shira Shirim, right? I disagree that there was ever a machloket. We all agree that it got in by the end. The question was, did anyone ever question it, right? Rabbi Kiva cannot accept that Shira Shirim ever questioned his Kodesh Kadashim, right? What else? Kohelet. Right? Where the Gemara says, well, Kohelet, you know, it's heretical and contradictory and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. We didn't want to put it in. We wanted to be going in. Did put it in Cherem, yada-yada-yada. And we didn't because we realized that Chilaso Torah, the Sofo Torah, right? The beginning is from, the end is from, it must be the middle is from, work it out. Right? That was, right, that's the Gemara saying. What else? Chezkel, right? What was the problem with Chezkel? Not Kfira. There's no problem with Chezkel. No. It has halachot that are against the Torah. It has halachic passages that seem to be against the Torah. So then where it says, well, it would have been put in Cherem, except someone went up, locked himself in the attic, burned the midnight oil. There's a fancy word for this. I used it once. Oh, it'll come to me. There's a fancy word for burning the midnight oil, a single verb. And worked out every stira between Yechezkel and the Torah. Yalla, it made it into Tanakh. Fine. Okay, those are books that were questionable. What books float? Give me an example of a book that Tanakh knows about, that Chazal know about, that's contemporaneous to Tanakh, in many ways is similar to Tanakh, and nevertheless doesn't make it into Tanakh. Why not? That the Gemara knows about. That the Gemara talks about. Maybe knows about it. Ben Sira. Right, Ben Sira. Right, Ben Sira is the book that the Gemara knows about. Well, but more in some places they also sort of read Ben Sira, which is a wisdom literature, which is like contemporaneous, right? It sounds very much like Mishlei, right? So sometimes Chazal say you're not allowed to read Ben Sira, heresy, no chelam haba. And in other places it quotes Ben Sira glowingly and uses it to prove point. In some places even implying that it's a pasuk. You know, kind of. The Gemara is all over the place on Ben Sira. Yes. Then there are the books, as Yaakov notes, that are contemporaneous that don't make it in. At all. Now, Sefer Makkabim is not that problem. Sefer Makkabim is not contemporaneous. That's why the easiest reason why Sefer Makkabim doesn't make it into Tanakh is because it's later. Right? It's not contemporaneous. It's much later. Right? Right? Meaning the last book of Tanakh is, right? Meaning that the fact that Makkabim doesn't make it in, the simple reason is simply because it's late. Right? Because it's hundreds of years after Stimat of Tanakh, right? The closing of Tanakh. On the other hand, there might also be theological issues with Makkabim. There are certain things that are questionable, whether Chazal actually thinks that it should make it in. So, but probably the simplest read is simply that it's too late. You know, we learned last year Maccabees 1. Right? Maccabees 1 fundamentally is a very frum book. Certain things, you know, are shtickle questionable maybe, from a Chazal perspective in terms of their obsession with Kanaut and you know, the machloket about Yahar Gval Yavor that goes on there, where one group thinks that Shabbat is Yahar Gval Yavor and therefore allows themselves to be killed in war, and then Matasyahu Hafkin, that Shabbat is not Yahar Gval Yavor, if you weren't convinced that Chazal were serious. In Sanhedrin, they said they actually voted on what is Yahar Gval Yavor. You now discover in Maccabees, yes, they voted, because there was actually a change. There were other people who felt differently. And other books, there are other weird books, like the Book of Judith, the Book of Tobias, the Book of Pseudo-Daniel, right? The extra chapter to Daniel, right? What? Enoch. Yes, Enoch. All types of fun. Jubilees, right? Some of these are a lot of fun, right? I mean, when I was learning Daniel a few years ago with, it was last year with Zev and with Dov, yeah. And with Darius, after we finished Daniel, we spent one day on the extra prakim of Daniel, the wonderful story of Daniel the Dragon Slayer. Yes, this is an actual story. And lest you think, oh, that's why it doesn't appear in Tanakh, it does appear in the Midrash. Beis Rabbah has the exact same tradition that Daniel is a dragon fighter. Yes, your world is now shaken. Yes. Daniel is, according to the apocryphal chapters of Daniel and the Midrash Bereshit Rabbah, is a dragon fighter. Yes. What exactly a dragon means there is an interesting question. Who knows? But it could be a crocodile or something.
My favorite thing I remember seeing was, I think, Rashi on the blue speckle was on,
so right, it could be a dragon, it could be a crocodile, no one really knows, but whatever it was, a serpent of sorts, who knows. But yeah, there is this parak of it, and you know, a lot of these books are really weird, but a lot of them also share traditions with Chazal. A lot of things that appear in Jubilees appear in Midrashim as well, like the story that everyone thinks is in Chumash, but it's not in Chumash, of Avram breaking the idol. That's not in Chumash, but it is in Jubilees, and it is in Bereshit Rabbah, right? It is a very early Jewish tradition, which appears in many sources. Midrash Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Which is a much later Midrash, right? But those are traditions that are floating around, like of Moshe becoming the prince of Ethiopia. All types of, you know, fascinating things that are just... Yes, there's a whole tradition that appears in Midrash, it appears in Philo, it appears in Josephus, that basically they're missing many decades, many, many, many decades of Moshe's life. Where is he? So one of the very traditional answers is that he went to Ethiopia, won a war, married the queen, and was king of Ethiopia for a while, and that is Isha Kushita Sher Lakach. Right, the Kushite woman he's married to, according to these traditions, is not Tzipporah, but is this Ethiopian queen that is his other wife. The Rashbam even thinks that's Pshat. The Rashbam, like the consummate Pashtan, thinks that is Pshat in Torah, because he thinks, why should it be Tzipporah? Kushite in Pshat means Kushite, right, a woman from Kush. And therefore, you know, it's such a musad shot in these traditions that it made it into the canonical Ten Commandments movie. Israel. Yes, the beginning of, not the beginning of King, but he went and he fought and he married and da 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 da. A lot of it makes it in to the Ten Commandments because Cecil B. DeMille, when he opens the movie, there's a 2-minute parshanut where he, before the movie starts, Cecil B. DeMille, the director, comes out and says, there's a fundamental problem. There's many decades missing of Moses' life, so we didn't know what to do. So we consulted Philo and Josephus and the Midrash. The Midrash is credited at the end of the in the credits at the end of the movie, right? And the ancient traditions, and we inspired us to tell the story of Moses' life, right? It's a, you know, this is Bavos, you know. Yeah, it's fun times. Fun times, great. I've mentioned it before. It was one of my favorite courses I gave in Toronto, was Exodus in the Movies. I gave a 4-part thing on just the different Parshanut moves that the three movies I know of on Yitzhak Mitzrayim do. Prince of Egypt, Ten Commandments, and Gods and Kings, which is horrible. The other two are great. Gods and Kings is garbage. Mavish. Stupidest thing in the world. It was like an angry atheist who just wanted to express his anger at God, so he personified God as a really annoying, like, 10-year-old who's constantly having a tantrum. It's a horrible movie. Just, like, stupid on, like, so many levels. It got, like, lambasted. Like, it's not often that I agree with, like, the Egyptian government, but the Egyptian government banned it from being played in Egypt. Like, it should have been banned from everywhere. It was horrible. It was terrible. It was the worst movie ever. It was, you know how painful it was to watch that movie. Oh, so bad. Well, the things I do to prepare shir, I'm telling you. That was the hardest hachana I ever did, ever, in my entire life. What? Yeah, but it wasn't as bad as God as a tantrumy little child. It was horrible. Like, who thinks that? I assume they ban other movies, I don't know what. But they banned this movie. It was really bad. I don't think so. I mean, Ten Commandments was so long ago, who knows? Right? That was like... I mean, that movie feels like it was written in the time of Moshe. I mean, it's like... But it's a great movie. Like, in terms of Parshanut, it's great. It is 3.5 hours, given. But the Parshanut, brilliant. I kid you not. Like, I made myself watch the whole thing. It was long, but the Parshanut He's not joking. When Cecil B. DeMille starts the movie and says, like, he did his research and really tried to, he really did. Like, he really built, he brings a lot of the Midrashim that he invokes to life in beautiful ways. And you really understand what the Midrash is getting at when you see it visualized. I am a fan. Like, and Prince of Egypt is a Pasha brilliance. I mean, it's just like, I hold the Prince of Egypt. But Gods and Kings is garbage. Just garbage. Okay. Totally besides the point, though. The point is that there are other books floating around, right? That's the point. There are all kinds of interesting books floating around. So, the Ritva says, well, guess what one of those books is? The Lost Book of Bilam. And he says, V'hada Amrinan b'moshe shekatav svaro u'parshat Bilam nir'in divrei ha'omrim she'enzu parshat Bilam shektuva b'torah ela parshat b'tne etmahu shekatav erich v'yoter v'ayta metuya b'hem. It was another book that elaborated on the rest of the story. You know, throughout Tanakh, it sometimes says the rest of the story is written. V'sefer divrei yamim, sefer machamar Hashem, sefer divrei yamim. All these records of wars and kings and da da da. Right? Tanakh tells you that there are other books floating around that tell you the details that don't need to be in the main books of Tanakh. Right? The annals of the kings. Well, this is another one. Right? And the Shalav, in an alternate shot, basing those in this Ritva and others, the Re'ib and Shwib says this in his drashot on Balak, says that the Gemara sometimes talk about it, like the 400 chapters of Hilchot Avodah Zarah, right? The Gemara talks about this. Or the Midrash that talks of the Battle of Midian that we've lost. So he says, yeah, Parshat Bilam is another short book. Moshe was a very prolific author. He wrote Moshe. He wrote the Torah. And then, you know, he also wrote the story of Bilam, and it's another book. We lost it. Come out, right? One day we'll find it. You know, I don't know, right?
Or we won't.
Or we won't, or whatever, right? It happens. But some people go even farther and say, not only was it another book, but we know what book it is. Oh, what book is it? Okay. So, some people so one second. So they base it on the following line in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara, when talking about Bilam's age, Hanina says he died at the age of 33 or 34, and an Amin agreed to him based on a note of Bilam. Shapir Kalmar, he says, you're right. I saw this notebook of Bilam, but Bilam Chagira and it said in it that Bilam the lame was 33 years old when Pinchas the robber killed him. And therefore some have said, aha! You see that the Gemara was aware of this book because the Min says he saw it. Then they go farther. Okay, so we've said maybe it's a book that we don't have, or maybe it's a book Chazal have, and even I can show you they have it. But then some have gone even farther, which was that in 1967, they found a text in Jordan, in Deir Allah, which refers to Bilam ben Beor, and actually contains significant details which are thematically parallel to the story that we know of Bilam with some differences. And so some say, not only is it a book that is external to Tanakh, not easily a book that I can point to the Chazal have, it's a book that we have some version of. It's that text that we found in 1967 in Jordan. That is either the actual Parshat Bilam or some related book to Parshat Bilam, but you thought, Yosef thought we'd never find it? No! Some people said, not only will we find it, but we did find it! We found it in 1967 in Deir Allah! Right, there it is! It's a book that tells you some version of the Bilam story! Oh! Kishmak! Kishmak! So we have possibility one, which was Parshat Bilam is in fact what we know as Balak. Why is it called separate? Either, practically, how did he know about it? Chiddush. He still wrote it. Or, as Sean said, no, because he's such a great Navi, it didn't need Moshe right? Or Tzadok said he didn't need Moshe to make a Torah. So you might have thought that it didn't have Moshe to make a Torah. Kamash Malan, that it did need Moshe. Or, as the Shalom said, the fact that Bilam said he's evil adds something to it, right? So it makes it unique, and the Chiddush is that even though it was unique and you needed Bilam to channel it, Moshe then integrated it back into the Torah. So that's one direction. The second direction is, no, it really refers to a different book, right? And it's a book either that we've lost, and we just suppose the Chazal had it, or it's a book that we lost, but we know Chazal had, because it's that Pinkas of Bilam mentioned the Gaon Sanhedrin, or if you really want to be ambitious, it's that book or something like that book that we found in Jordan in 1967 in Deir Allah, which discusses Bin al-Bandor and the story with slight differences, right? Thematic differences, but it's the fan fiction of, whatever, I don't know, of Bilam. There is one more possibility, and this goes back to Adam said. There are those who say, no, it really is another book, and it really is something in the rest of Tanakh, but it's not Tehillim. So where is it? If you wanted to say that it's something else that's in Tanakh, then where is it? How well do you guys know Tanakh? So I said, it has to be a place in Tanakh where they talk about Bilam. Is there a place where they talk about Bilam? Yes, there is. Someone want to give me a Tanakh for a second? Do we have a Tanakh man? A Tanakh? No? You want to quickly? Let's see, do we have time? Yeah, we have time. You want to run and quickly get me a Tanakh? What? Eov? Eov was a great guess because no one knows what's in Eov. It's not Eov, though. I mean, it's a good guess. Tillam's also a good guess. Both wrong.
The Gemara also says that one book that Moshe wrote was Eov.
Yeah, so that. Yeah, thank you. But the Megale Amukot in Vayet Hanan says there is, if you want to say that it's a separate book, that, right, you don't want to say it's a book we don't have or it's outside of Tanakh. You don't want to say it's just Parsha Bilam. You want to say it's a book in Tanakh, but not in Chumash, and therefore, in fact, there are other psukim in Torah written by Moshe, which are not in the Torah, so then you have to look for a parsha, a unit that talks about Bilam. And there is one. And it is in Sefer. Yosha. It's in Sefer Yosha. Right? Perek Yud Gimel in Sefer Yoshua talks about basically the Yoshua is recalling basically the history of how they got Eretz Israel, right, as he gets old. So he says, this is the land that's left over. And then in the middle of that unit, he says, divide up the land of the 2.5 Shvatim. What is the land of 2.5 Shvatim? So once he's talking the land of 2.5 Shvatim, so what does he need to do? He needs to explain. So he goes back to the wars of Moshe, the Kol Harei Sichon, etc. And in that context, he mentions, right, the battles that got him to that point. And he says, Uveit Peor, Vashdon Abizga Uveda Yeshimot, V'chol Arei HaMishor V'chol Mamlechot Tichon Melech HaMari Asher Malach V'cheshbon Asher Hikam Moshe Oto V'et Nisiei Midyan Et Evi V'et Rekem V'et Shur V'et Chur V'et Reva Nisichei Tichon Yoshvei Haaretz, right? All those people that Moshe won in the battle against Midyan. And who did he kill in that battle? That Bilam bin Beor, Akosem, Arguven Israel, Becharev, Elachalayem. And he killed Bilam in that war. By Higvul bin Eruvain, Ayardain, and then these are the borders that they won in all those wars, in Midyan, and Sichon, and Hogan, da-da-da-da-da. Right? So the Megala Muko says maybe a version of what Adam said, which is, right, so basically three possibilities. It is Parsha Bilam. It's something known to us elsewhere in Tanakh, but not in Chumash. Maybe Yoshua Yud Gimel. right? Or it's really an extra biblical book, either that we don't know about, that we know Chazal knew about, we don't know about, or that Chazal knew about and we have found in Der Allah. Well, no, this is not so bad, because you say, Parshat Bilam, that we, right, maybe, yeah, you'll say it's not a sefer, but then you'll answer, no, because in this case, it really is a parashah. Meaning he wrote a few extra psukim that got put into another book. Right, that's why we refer to it as a parashah, because it's a unit that got put into another book. Right, that's what we would say.
And what are you also saying, are you claiming, what's the point here? The claim that Moshe, originally said that Yeshua is quoting it, or is it claiming that Yeshua never said it, that
Yeshua is quoting it? Right, I mean, Yeshua just had these few psukim from Moshe, and he's like, oh, I'm publishing my book. I have some notes from my Rebbe, you know, here, included verbatim. Yeah. Okay? So those are basically the three directions that you can take. Shlomo divides it into two. He sort of wraps up. I think these are really three directions. I mean, I don't disagree on the sheet note. I would categorize it in three different directions. And then I'll read you his conclusion, right, which is, whichever approach one takes among the survey interpretations, the minuscule passage of Bava Batra 14b does a lot of work, sparking analysis and expanded view of Bilam and the nature of Torah. We either learn about Mosaic extra Pentateuchal compositions on Bilam, or else about theological perspectives on the nature of prophecy, and indeed prophecy in general. This is a testament to the power of interpretive tradition, where every word is expanded into heaps and heaps of wisdom. Moshe may be buried, but our interpretations still pour forth from the Torah of his lips. Thank you, Shlomo, for big man poetic there. But yeah, I do think it's a fascinating passage, how much comes really from, you know, three words. Right, that, or whatever, however many of the words you want to put there, right? Sefer Bilam, Parshat Bilam, Moshe, Katav, Moshe, how many words of it surprise you there? Okay, good. So that is the question of Parshat Bilam, and...